basically what we saw last week. We mentioned... Okay. Well, let's sort of summarize what we've seen until now. This is some of you who weren't here, and there was a little bit of vacation. We saw that the custom of Kaddish is relatively late. It seems to come in during the Gaonic period. Chazal don't really mention it at all. The custom was based on a medrash in which Rabbi Akiva was able to redeem somebody from purgatory by having his child say Kaddish. The question then, in the 1600s, we see the question, and I mentioned that the custom from the period of the Gaonim was essentially by males only, because, again, the assumption was that, like, males are the only ones who could be Shalich Tzibur, because it's a Tefillah B'Tzibur concept, that never occurred to anybody that a daughter might be able to say Kaddish as well. It seems that the first time this seems to come up, or is recorded in the response literature, is sometime in the 1600s, where in Amsterdam, someone passed away and asked his daughter to say Kaddish. And he turned to the rabbis of the community, and everybody said, fine. And she said Kaddish. What she did, she said Kaddish in her home, because they had a minyan for in her home to say Kaddish, and she said Kaddish. She said Kaddish Rabbanit, because they were learning in their home, they had 10 people learning, and she said Kaddish after the learning.
Was it Brachot?
What?
She was the only mourner?
She was the daughter. There was a daughter, and she said
She was the only mourner?
She was the only mourner.
It can't, it's
not. Well, that's only, it's only, the, it's not, not the, the, the din of Kaddish is on the child. The extension to other family members, in fact, in many, many communities, if there are sons, none of the other women say Kaddish. Some say Kaddish for 30 days, some say something, but
no,
custom...
But she had brothers, say.
She did not have brothers. If she had brothers, it would have been other brothers. It's usually it's a situation that Tshuva talks about, that she was the only child. And the idea is that Bram Zakeh Avuah, that a child brings merit, thank you, brings merit onto the parent, because after all, what the child is doing is catalyzing the sanctification of God's name. And since you have such a wonderful child who can do such a thing, that serves merit on the parent. So the Chavot Yair, the case was brought to the Chavot Yair, and he objected, not on halachic grounds, but on public policy grounds. He said the people will, because this was not the normal custom, even though logically it doesn't say anything halachically wrong for it, wrong about it. Now the question, why is it nothing halachically wrong? That we saw in other Rishonim discussed, the fact that this Kaddish Yatov, which comes after Aleinu, and all the Kaddishim that come at the end, these are not communal Kaddishim. These were instituted much later, and they were instituted for the mourners, or they were instituted to be said after Kaddish, and they were said by the mourners, but these are not communal Kaddishim as viewed. These are personal Kaddishim. That's why a child can say it. Why can a child say it? A child can't be motzi. Yes, a child can say it, even if he's the only child. Remember, the system in the 1600s was that only one person said Kaddish. So how can a child say Kaddish? The answer is because these are not communal obligations, these are personal obligations or personal customs. But the Chabagira was against it completely. Then we saw a little bit later, the Rabbi Yaakov Reisha, the Shvut Yaakov, maintains it's all right to say in the house. It's perfectly all right to say in the house. Certainly not in the synagogue, because the public policy consideration, Rabbi Yoyer Bachrach didn't even want to allow it to be said in the home, because that might lead to confusion. But the Shvut Yaakov was willing to allow it to be said in the home. Other poskim, like we mentioned, the Mante Ephraim, we read there, objected to it again because it might be a problem called Yisha Erva, and even though she's only reciting or she's only zogging, saying Nusach, he felt that there would be some problem to it. All right, then that's essentially what we have. I mean, there are many other tshuvot all the way through. What we did see was that essentially in Svartic communities, there was no, the question really rarely ever arose. There was never such a custom as maybe a woman would say Kaddish. In the Ashkenazi communities, however, do I have to to share, we ran out of copies. This is a good problem, bro. Okay? We have to share. Copies, sir, will disappear. Okay, we did say, you'll have to believe me on this, I don't have any references, but you will see a couple references as we go along, that there was, time and time again, testimony that in the Villa Gaon shul, and this is the shul, and that shul, the women would come into the men's section and say, "Kaddish." There were cases time after time again, it may not have been normative, but it wasn't outlandish. You ever said, having heard that a woman said Kaddish, yes, that was true. In many from communities, if a woman was the only mourner, she would come in and say Kaddish. Now, in some communities, they only permitted a minor daughter to do that, under the age, let's say, under the age of bat mitzvah, but a major they wouldn't allow. In other communities, they allowed even adult women to come in just to say Kaddish. And again, but the idea of women saying Kaddish was not non-existent as it was in the Sephardic communities, but it wasn't that common. I would say general policy was that women didn't say Kaddish, but there were many, many testimonies of the fact that women didn't say Kaddish. Last two weeks ago, we then read the tshuva of Rav Henkin. And Rav Henkin is writing this tshuva, first tshuva in Tav Shin Zayin. This is on source numbers, bottom of number six, we read this tshuva. Tav Shin Zayin, which is 1947 approximately. He then later wrote on it in Tav Shin Chav Dalid, which is 1964. And in both his response, Rav Henkin is of the opinion that the power of Kaddish is great. Why does he want to say the power of Kaddish is great? It's great in bringing people who are strange closer to Judaism. Now, why is he setting up that? Why does he start off with that premise? He wants to say, look, what are you going to argue against me? Public policy? If the people are going to get confused, women saying Kaddish, I have a good public policy reason to be martyr. Okay, you want to say that people are going to get confused, they're going to see just like women say Kaddish, and therefore they're going to think that a woman can be a Shaliach Tzibur. He says, on public policy considerations, I'll give you a good public policy reason why she should say Kaddish. Because we know, we can testify that in the modern period, people are totally, they're not in the Kehilot. You know, in the 16, 1700s, people belong to a Kehilah. Right? Certainly, the whole problem of Shimshon Raphael Hirsch was having in the 1800s, was also about this problem of belonging to Kehilah. Right? And which Kehilah belonged to. In very organized communities, there were Kehilot. You were in the Kehilah or out of the Kehilah. Anyway, people now, there's no such thing as a Kehilah. Everything is self-selected. And people are very, very estranged. Now we know that people come back to the shul, come back to Judaism, because the recitation of Kaddish. So now we have a good public policy reason to indeed say that women should say Kaddish. At least it's a counterbalance of the public policy consideration. Furthermore, says Rav Henkin, if the woman is dressed modestly, and if she's in the Ezrat Nashim, right? And she's not simply trying to make a statement, but she's coming with Shem Shemayim, then there's no reason why he says that she should be able to say Kaddish when the men are saying Kaddish. And that statement, he's making another premise. He's saying, notice, things have changed. What was your fear? Your fear was that people would get confused. That was your public policy consideration. But now, she's on the other side of the Ezrat Nashim. One reason that there's not going to be a confusion. Second of all, she's going to say it where everybody else says it. The whole system has changed. The system is not where one person gets up. It might be true. If one woman were to get up and say Kaddish for the whole community, you might think she's lacking, you know, acting like a Shaliach Tzibur. But if she's getting up with all the other Avelim, public policy consideration doesn't apply. Okay, so this is what his argument is. He's essentially trying to undermine the original public policy considerations of the original post in the Chavad Yair, and even the Shul Yaakov, who wouldn't allow him to stay at home and not in Shul, that A, she says it on the other side of the Mechitza, B, she says it when everybody else says it, so there's no Shaliach Tzibur problem, And even if you're going to object under those conditions, there's a good public policy consideration that she should say to counterbalance the other public policy. For all those reasons, that is essentially, he doesn't say it in those words, but that is essentially what he's arguing. Yes?
And what if she alone is saying Kaddish? There's no men saying Kaddish.
Rav Henkin is seems to be of the opinion that she should say it with somebody else. Because his feeling is that that's part of the consideration of counterbalancing the public policy. That the public policy was the confusion that they would think she's a Shliach Tzibur. According to Rav Henkin, it would seem she cannot say it alone. That is correct. But that's a minor problem. My problem, when it comes to shul, and if you have a gabbai who's aware, when I was rabbi at Harvard Hillel, okay, and there were several instances where a woman wanted to say Kaddish, I said, fine, and I made sure somebody else said Kaddish. Because I was aware, you'll see there are other opinions, like the Rav's opinion or holds there's no problem. Rav Henkin is concerned, and we understand, he's trying to counter them. I don't think Rav Henkin would say there's a travesty of justice if she says it alone. His problem is trying to counterbalance as much as possible the argument, the public policy consideration of the Chavak Yair, that she should be thought as being the Shaliach Tzibur. Okay? Okay. Now, that was essentially Rav Henkin's position. Now, several people in response to this argument, almost immediately, several Gedolim, amongst them was Rav Halberstadt and Menashe Klein, came out challenging Rav Henkin's position. How does she say Kaddish in the Ezrat Nashim? Because essentially what you're saying, you know, I told you that the custom was what? The custom was, we have a record that she came into the men's section to say Kaddish. What was the motivation of coming into the men's section to say Kaddish? Because that's where the minyan was. You have to say Kaddish in a minyan, right? Now, the assumption all along, and the poskim say it, that the assumption is Jumin Amen. 10 men for this minyan. That it, since Kaddish in its institution, the only way I can explain it is that Kaddish in its institution was the Davar Shebe Kedusha, and the rules for a Davar Shebe Kedusha is that it requires a male minyan. That's one of the rules of a Davar Shebe Kedusha. Well, if that's why Kaddish always appears as a Davar Shebe Kedusha, then here too, it's a Davar Shebe Kedusha and requires a male minyan. That doesn't mean that a woman can't do it. It just means that you need a male minyan. Now this gets into the problem of an analysis of minyan, and there is a loose link here. Because when we discuss woman and minyan, I demonstrated that according to the first school, and the first school says that whenever women are obligated equally with men, they count for a minyan. And even by Dvarim Shebekdusha, why are Dvarim Shebekdusha, don't women count for a minyan? Not because there's this hocus pocus about Dvarim Shebekdusha. It's because by all the Dvarim Shebekdusha, men are obligated, women aren't obligated. There's a rationale, it's obligation. It's not this word Dvarim Shebekdusha. Dvarim Shebekdusha essentially happens to be all those public prayer services in which God's name is sanctified, but that's it, it's public prayer. And women are free from public prayer. So now I'm coming along here and saying that women can say Kaddish, yet they can't count for a minyan. There's a problem here. I don't want to slough it. What I'm saying is that essentially it might well be that since we've adopted a prayer form in which in its normative state it's a Davar Shebekdusha and it's a public obligation, and therefore women are free, therefore when it was transformed by the custom, it's a custom, to say Kaddish after Aleinu and the like and make a Kaddish Yatom, it was transformed with the same rules. Okay? And that's the way it seems to be. Okay? I could see somebody arguing with me on this issue, but they'd have to bring proof.
The example where the woman said Kaddish after a minyan of men who learned, it wasn't public prayer, it was just a learning session.
You're right. I'm acknowledging that there's a problem here. I'm acknowledging that it's not as clear cut. It's not. What I can say is, I culled all the literature that I have on women and minyan, and every case where the issue came up, Vakadish, we all said in the evening. I haven't said of anyone to raise the suggestion that there could be a minion of women. If somebody would come along and tell me that it might be, I wouldn't be surprised. But I think in order to do such a thing, they need a much stronger leg to stand on. Okay, besides, it would seem to me that the majority of poskim would be against it. Because remember, this would only be true according to the first school, that women equal out. But there are two other schools. One is that women don't count for minyan unless, don't count at all. And the third school that holds wanted to publicize. This is not to publicize. It's a public prayer concept. It's a group concept. It's not to publicize the miracle. So therefore, I would say that even if, according to the first school, one could argue that women might count for this minyan, that the majority of poskim, right, and that's how you vote. You vote by majority of poskim, the paskim, it would come down that women don't count for a minyan. Okay? But I think that as far as the first school is concerned, it still might be an open issue. I don't think it's closed issue, other than I don't see the poskim discuss it. Suppose we simply say it's a Dabar Shel Kedusha, that's it. Now, I'm going to give you one precedent to buttress what you're saying. I'm telling you why I'm struggling so much. One of the things that I sometimes consider Dabar Shel, sometimes consider, some machloket, is Kriyat HaTorah. Okay, and women don't normally count for many for Kriyat HaTorah. And yet the Chatam Sofer says by Parshat Zachor, I mentioned this is the famous Bar Mitzvah drasha of the Chatam Sofer, which goes on for several pages, and I must tell you that if he wrote, and they say he wrote it. It took me about six times reading it again and again to understand it. It's a very deep piece. But in any case, but I don't put it past the Chatam Sofer to do it. I mean, he was a brilliant, brilliant individual. And in any case, I wouldn't put the fault on my part. Now, the fact of the matter is, he states, right, that by Parshat Zachor, women count for me because he holds that are obligated. And he clearly holds is the first school. So you can see that this might be a case of something that's normally considered a Dabar Shel Kedusha, although that's not so clear, it's a problematic. And yet, when the woman is obligated, she counts. See, it's so, therefore, maybe by Kaddish. The only other out that I can also give is that Kaddish is obligatory on nobody. It's a custom. Mm-hmm. So therefore, maybe we simply keep the same rules as were before, the men count and women don't count. Since nobody obligatory, my friends, what the custom was just simply to pull it over. I admit there's a problem. I come out and say that according to the first school, there's clearly a problem here. And I don't have a clear handle on how to resolve this particular issue. Okay. Having said that, let me just say one last thing. Something that I recently discovered. Rabbi Eliezer Silver was considered for a long time, he was the head of the Agudas Yisrael in the United States in the 40s, I think during the period of the war. His son testifies that his father told him that there was a case where they went to the Beit HaTfilot. You know, they had the service at the funeral home. And there were about everybody was there, it was the middle of the day, it was a working day, and everybody came to the service. But they went out to the grave site, which if you know is usually several hours travel, and there wasn't a minyan of men. And the daughters were crying bitterly, and nobody was saying Kaddish to the grave site, etc., etc. And that Rabbi Eliezer Silver on this one occasion said that 10 women, they could say Kaddish. Again, what is what? 10 women?
10 women counted as
his wife. That's the son of David Silver, of David Silver. His son is 90. Okay, and he testifies he's in Pennsylvania. I picked up the phone and I called him and he verified and I have a handwritten letter from him which he wrote to Joel Wolowski. And in any case, that he testifies that his father allowed 10 women. He said he allowed it once. His father talked to him about it several occasions. It seems his father was either very proud about it or very guilty about it, I don't know. But his father was a true, true, I mean, this we're talking big league. This is, you know, and you know about Rav Moshe Feinstein, and that league, okay? And he allowed on this one occasion, and we don't know, maybe he felt the halakha really wasn't allowed, but he held that in this one case he could have relied on the first school, and it maybe felt it was Shatat Chak and Tremendous Tsar, and I don't know what was his motivation for allowing. Nobody ever discussed it, and he said, unfortunately, I never discussed it with my father. He said, I never discussed it with my father. My father talked to me about it, told me about it. So you got everything I know about women saying, yes. Oh, yes.
That is what you said, the dwellers were at the graveside that reminded me.
Yeah, well, the states that did.
Yeah.
You said it's crazy like the Shalom. Now, it's crazy if you're a non-capitalist, if you're a capitalist. Well, why don't we see, is it all right? We'll take a break and I'll explain to these Menachem Shalom.
Okay, I just want to.
Yes.
The point was that these are women who have no obligation. And therefore, they can have
fair. Well, actually, I try to point out that nobody has an obligation.
Okay, so
the obligation that people have, the obligation to say Kaddish, the obligation to say Kaddish is from the custom and from Kibbutz Avein. That is, your parents expect you to say Kaddish. They want to make sure they get redeemed from purgatory. So the question is, what is your parents? I would say that most. Under most circumstances, parents don't expect their daughters to say Kaddish. They know that even in the modern times, it's a bit of a hassle. We'll talk about the Masa, what to do and how to do it. But it's a hassle. So the parents will say that, you don't have to do it. In fact, there are many posts can discuss this whole issue. Can a father say, I don't want you to say Kaddish for me? Can the father do all these things?
But don't they often ask you?
They'll say, yes, they do. Yeah, yeshiva should say something. But you have to understand that the poskim couldn't have freed a woman from saying Kaddish if it was an absolute obligation. It's not an absolute obligation. It's not an absolute obligation in anybody. The only problem probably the Dayanim in Amsterdam had was that he clearly kibbutz avein. He clearly asked, and there's a constant halacha mitzvah lekayem et divrei hamet. It was an obligation to keep. So that's why the rabbis in Amsterdam were at least struggling with the problem, and that's why the Chabad Yair said no, because we don't set aside the father's desires because of the good of the community. We can do such things.
Why was Rabbi
Akiva in purgatory?
No. Rabbi Akiva saw this gentleman who was doing labor that seemed crazy to him. And he said, because he saw, and it turned out what he saw was a person who wasn't, not a real person, it was a vision. And this person was in purgatory. And he said, how do you get out? How can I get out? He said, my son says, Baruch Hu Kaddish. I'll get out. But I don't know where my son is. He went and found the son. And he taught him to say Kaddish. And this next thing he knew, this man came into a dream and praised him and said, you can just save my son. Okay, now let me just go back now to this. Yes.
What is it we are obligated to do? Just to sit Shiva?
What you're obligated to do is sit Shiva. Chazal v'mataken Shiva. That's correct. And the laws of mourning. The obligation to say Kaddish is a custom. I don't mean to say that customs are not a binding, but the customs are binding to the extent of what the custom stated. Now, customs do bind males, because that was the custom. It's very clear throughout the literature that the custom never developed around women saying Kaddish. So women clearly don't even have there's no rabbinic obligation to anybody. As far as the custom obligation, which is a sort of a communal concept of neder, of taking an oath upon themselves, devolved upon men. Women did not say it, okay? And so essentially, the posting had a little easier time of removing women from this same hatch because they weren't accustomed to not living. Okay. I also mentioned, by the way, before I go on to talk about the Yerushalmi customs, that the Kaddish is considered low man on the totem pole. Of the things that one can do, okay? What the highest thing that one can do as a schut, as a merit for one's parents, is learn Torah. Second came giving tzedakah, and third came saying Kaddish.
This including women?
Yes. Okay. Now, in fact, you see the posts say that better those posts who don't want women to say Kaddish say better she should get stucca, better she should list come to shul and listen to other people say Kaddish and answer, you know, answer the Kaddish with kavana. I mean, they talked about, you know, there are a lot of other merits, meritorious things that people can do other than saying Kaddish.
It would seem that, I'm not sure the priority list would go quite the same way for a woman.
You might be right.
I
was thinking, I'm glad you said it. It may not get the same, because women don't have the same learning obligation, but that depends, that's not so clear. I mean, if it's her mitzvah that she's obligated in, it's true that women may not have the same obligation as men do in learning Torah, because men have to know theoretical things, but women have to know obligatory things. And the question is analysis of how much women are higher than the Torah.
She's clearly obligated in Stucca.
Yeah, but the question, that's correct. So you think maybe it's Stucca the Limit Torah and vice versa, but the Talmud Torah can get Kulam. And even if so, she doesn't get the same schar as men, but she gets schar. And the Gadol, you know, it's true, maybe Gadol Mitzuvavos Me'esh and Mitzuvavos said, but doesn't, but if Talmud Torah is connected Kulam, it's connected Stucca too. I'm not sure.
Chesed.
Could be
she can't
get
stuck either,
but
she's not about buying all the money.
You tell my wife.
I'm not talking about today, but, you know, certainly...
But today, whatever, it's true. No, there's a discussion of posting can a woman... can a woman give stuff against her husband's will?
Right,
that
she can.
That, may not, but it's achen ve in the family to get kicked out of that situation. I mean, you're right. I mean, you want to push the shot, you know. If you want to push me to the wall and say, okay, I got it, comes to Besdin, you know, I would say achen ve, but the husband has a right to object. Right? On the other hand, she can say, don't support me, and I'll keep my money. I mean, so the question of, you know, in many homes, she's the breadwinner. So don't, you know, you might not, should not push. Right? You don't support me anyway. Right? So the money is mine, which means if the money is mine, I don't have to even give it to my husband. Right? Depends what she states. And she can say it at any time in the marriage relationship she wants to. She can say, I'm the major breadwinner, don't support me, the money is mine. Right? As long as the husband, that's, understand that. She's empowered to make that decision. She can at any time, why is the money his? Because when he's obligated to support her, so whatever she brings in and he has to support her in style, whatever it is. But at any time she says, I don't want to be supported by you, and the money is mine, she can do it. And he can't say boo. Okay. Now the fact of the matter is, let me just go back. They'll go a little bit off on a tangent. Okay, tangent of where these Yerushalmi customs come from. The based on Kabbalah, at one's funeral, not only all his children attend. Okay, physical children, all the spiritual children, who are all these spiritual children? All the demons that are formed from semen that did not lead to any procreation. So any semen spilled, naturally or unnaturally, whatever, these create demons, and the demons come to the funeral. And they challenge. They channel spiritually or physically the natural children who are at the funeral as well and cause them a threat. Consequently, the children should not be at the funeral because it presents a sakana for them. Now, that's the origin of the custom that at the burial of the father, the children don't come, male or female. It has nothing but at the mother, they do.
Shows you how many people
she had demons, but not that.
No, it's very interesting.
Where does enough finish?
They wanted to hold me back, so they don't even know the customs in Yerushalayim.
No, that's correct.
They don't even know what they were going to try to stop you, which they didn't.
No, they may have held you back because you're a woman. I'll talk about that in a second.
Well, I hope so.
I'm on a roll.
Isn't there something not going after the hour?
I'll talk about it. That's right. Now, let me just finish this presentation. Now, at the funeral, is there a Chumash Morachus here? Yes. At the end of Chayes Sarah, it says that Abraham remarried. It says, "Vayosef Abraham deikach isha shmak tuha." And from this, the Gemara learns that a man should not be alone without a wife. And he had more children. But they had Zimran and Yakshan and Medan and Midian, right? The Yakshan, and he had the Midian, it says, now. But they were considered, in all these cases, they were not considered the wife. There was only one wife that was sunk. See, all the others, the wife. Some say, by the way, that Keturah was what? Hagar. That's correct. Anyway, it says, Vayikach Isha, but then the next sentence, he says, Vayiten Avraham et kol asher lo liyitzhak. Everything that was to Yitzhak, Levnei hapilat shim, asher l'Avraham, Natan Avraham matanot, Vayishalchem me'al Yitzhak b'no, b'odenu chai, kedma al eretz kedem. Okay, now. So that's the story. It's everything he had to his natural, his real son, which is Yitzhak, and to the Bnei Abilak Shem, he gave gifts. Now, when there's a disburial of a male, they do what's called hakafot. And these hakafot is essentially an exorcism of the demons, not out of the body, but out of the deceased. Because these demons are latching onto the natural body. Because they stick with their father, their spiritual father. And the pasuk that they say, they hold hands and you're not allowed to let go, because it's sort of this Kabbalistic exorcism. And it says, the first they say is, V'levnei ha-pilakshim ha-shel Avraham, natan Avraham ha-tanot, v'yashalchem mi'al yitzhak b'no b'odeh v'chai, keima al-eretz kedem. That's the verse, they read that verse. And every time they go around, they say that verse, and then they finish it with this sentence, and we say matanot, they have seven pieces of metal, and in each case they throw it into a different direction. And it's from the source of that, again, to remove these spiritual children away from the sea. Now, when those of us who, that's the minhag Yerushalmi, Shalayim, it's based on Kabbalah.
Right.
Right.
In cemeteries,
you're flying. Have you been to the Eretz Chaim Cemetery? Well, I'll tell you something. Eretz Chaim Cemetery, the Chevra Kedusha in Yerushalayim, and when it was consecrated with the Minhagim, Kedusha Yerushalayim, with the Minhag Yerushalayim, and that's what they do. When my father was buried, they came to me and said, "Do you mind if we do it?" That was my brothers and I had a very interesting debate. My father was a rationalist. He was a very firm Jew, very scholarly. He was not a mystic. And this would have driven him up a wall. On the other hand, I said, that's what my brother Dov said. He was a rationalist. It's called the Tata Lapena, the bones. But I argued that when my father bought the plot of land, he knew that there were customs in Yerushalmi. He never told, and he was at several funerals, he never told us not to do it. So therefore the presumption is that he may not have been happy about it, but he didn't. If it doesn't help, it doesn't hurt. And he wouldn't object. And he was there at several funerals, and he knew that they did.
Some pieces of metal are sometimes coins.
No, coins, pieces of metal. I don't know exactly what they are, like aluminum, what?
Not necessarily coins.
No, it's not coins, they're pieces of metal. Aluminum metal, that's right.
This is the fabrication of the pushing, right?
That's correct.
Not every fabrication in Yerushalayim does it. This is the minhag of the pushing.
Right. I've been both at the Harem Luchot when they did this. I was at my Esther's grandfather's funeral and they did this.
But it depends which fabrication you take in Yerushalayim. This is what the pushing.
Okay, this is the pushing. I'm sure the Sfardim don't do it. I'm sure, yes. Okay. Now, in Eretz Chaim, we insisted on being there, okay? And they said at the time, he said, well, then you go ahead. You don't follow the casket, you go to the Beit HaKfarot, you go in advance, okay? And then when they do that kafot, they don't want you near the body, so we stood far away.
Did you get hit by the metal?
Yeah. They didn't want us to be hit by a demon. And we stayed far away, we were at the Beit HaKfarot first, then the body came, and we went before the casket, not following the casket. It's because the concept is called achar hamita. Okay, because essentially what's interesting is those who walk, it's not considered kavod hamet to walk before the mita. It's considered kavod hamet to walk after the mita. You're there? No. They don't want you there at all. So you wanted to be there, to say kaddish, to be there. And I wanted to see my father return properly, and I went there. So we went ahead, and we stayed at a far away. Until they finished the hakafah, and then we came back with the kaddish.
Yes.
Do they do
this for all grown men or just?
They depends on the chaver kaddishim. They will do this for all grown men. In certain Beit HaKfarot, I said, as I mentioned, in Eretz Chaim, which is in Beit Shemesh, if the family objects, they will do it. Okay, it's the call of the family. That's it. Now, the custom of women that come in is also Kabbalistic. It says that so-and-so saw, and I think it's Zohar and Pekudei, it says that so-and-so, I forgot what it was, Pinchas, I think that's the name of the six in my head, saw the Satan being marakeed amongst the women at the Beit HaKfarot, dancing amongst the women, so to speak, as being that it was causing them their sensuous thoughts at the Beit HaKfarot, and therefore, and that becomes the custom. It's a sakana for the men to women to come to the Beit HaKfarot.
And what about pregnant women?
Yeah,
yes.
I heard stories of pregnant women
were
not allowed to go in the
sanctuary. Let me put it this way. As Charlie Brown says, there is no situation so bad that you can't make it worse by guilt.
That's right.
Oh, Esther.
In other
words, it's right.
There are things that, there are two things that people have, don't, you know, normally rational people who do irrational things. There's by birth and death. If you're worried about Tuma, and you're worried about Sheikh, and you're worried about demons being Togeya, and you're in that ethos, then of course pregnant women shouldn't be there. Who knows?
Yeah,
because
a cousin of mine, husband died, and I was pregnant at the time with my daughter, and I went in the car to the cemetery, but I was told you stay in the car, you don't get out of the car, and you stay there until the funeral is over.
Right, the feeling is that pregnant women are in a situation of semi-sakana. And you don't want to endanger her life by any spiritual attacks by the demons that rest somehow on the Beit HaKfarot. I must tell you, halachically, I can't understand it whatsoever.
Yeah.
Because halachically, I'm doing a mitzvah. Mm-hmm. I'm doing a mitzvah. And shluchim mitzvah and it's okay. I mean, I'm not saying that it was 100%, you know, I don't know how God works. But if I'm doing a mitzvah, I don't think that the demons have a right to attack me. The fact that I'm doing a mitzvah should protect me. Right? I mean, if we're dealing with a spiritual battle here, my desire to do a mitzvah should overcome the spiritual power.
Well,
if you learn at that level.
The child to his parents, because that's a mitzvah do,
right? That's a mitzvah do. Excuse me. Did you hear me?
By the way,
I just did not want
to. The bishop said he was asked by a student. I believe, I'll verify, but I believe he said that this is a mitzvah d'oraisa and this is a kavala, you know.
Shlomo Fishes is also to strange things. He's a tremendous person, and he doesn't fall. He's very makeable on all sorts of things. He's one of the biggest makeable in the religious community. He's the posek of the Eidah Haridus, and he's one of the biggest makeable for pregnant women and for nursing mothers. He's really a tremendous makeable. So when he says something as outlandish as this, it doesn't surprise me.
No, it wasn't outlandish.
The heck was it?
No, he's being...
I'm being sarcastic. I know he had on his tail. All right, so that's Kvura 1.1. Let's continue, okay? Moving on along. All right, so Rav Henkin said, as I mentioned, one of the major challenges to Rav Henkin was the fact that the woman is saying Kaddish not in the presence of a minion. And Rav Lau, in the modern period, in his tshuva on the subject, raises that very issue. That's what Rav Lau says, never said, relating to Rav Henkin. והנה יצא אחד מגאוני אמריקה, הגאון רבי יוסף אליהו, הנקין זצ"ל, אוקיי? וחידש שמכיוון שאישה מצווה על קידוש השם, אם היא תעמוד בצניעות בעזרת הנשים בעת אמירה הקדיש בבית הכנסת, היא תוכל לומר קדיש בפני הנשים, ובזה אין קפידה של צניעות, יש לנו צניעות פראבלם, אני לא יודע, סורס אדורים, אלא שקשה להתיר אותי פעם, זה כן פרמט. תארי בשולחן ערוך מבואר שאין אמירה קדיש בפחות מעשרה זכרים. ואם כן, אין מניין זכרים לקדיש שלה, she's saying in front of the women, not in the presence of the minion. ואין לומר שהיא מצטרפת למניין שלו בבית הכנסת, you can't say that she is now being part of the minion, that she's included in the minion of the בית הכנסת, שהרי כתב ערוך השולחן, שכיוון שלעזרת נשים יש מחיצה גמורה, חשיב כשתי רשויות, and since the Aruch HaShulchan says the Ezrat Nashim is a barrier, a complete barrier, חשיב כשתי רשויות, it's like two different rooms, ואינן מצטרפות לשלים עניין, they can't count together to count to for a minion. וכן אמירת הקדיש אינה במניין, that's what she's saying, קדיש, not in the room where there's the minion. ולהלכה נראה שאין לסמוך על הטרור של רבי הנקין, ובמיוחד בימינו, now he pulls out what? The public policy issue. Now let's see what public policy does he pull out. ובמיוחד בימינו, certainly in our time, יש לחשוש לסברת החברות יאיר ומסה בנימין, שעלולים לבוא מתקנים למיניהם. All sorts of reformists will come along, וילמדו מכאן להתיר לנשים לבוא לפני התיבה, they'll teach women to go in front of the David, before the תיבה, ועלולה לצאת תקלה מתחת ידינו, על כי אין להתיר לנשים לומר קדיש בכל אופן, מה שזה קדיש at all, what is he worried about? He's worried about conservative, reformed, egalitarian, that's what he said, מיוחד בימינו. His argument is that if it was true in the time of the Chavad Yair that you were afraid when there was no conservative reform and that is halakha kama in our time, the public policy value issue is about it. Yes?
He gives Kaddish a very special status. It's not because
if it wasn't, they could say with the minion and mechitz, or if it is, what? Or if it is, what? Varsha
v'kedusha,
that
means that everything we saw on the other side of mechitz, we can't say, because there's this barrier.
Good.
But fundamentally,
we have to ask, now we're now raising a fundamental issue.
Like, what are we doing over there?
That's true.
And should we not be answering the same thing? Maybe we should be saying,
we're just right on, because we may as well say,
that's very funny. I wouldn't put it that way, but that's a very, very good question. And there, in fact, is the Shita of the Meiri, who says that women down the other side of the Mechitza don't ever fulfill the Mitzvah. That's such a Shita of the Meiri. Most, the vast majority of us in this world. Let me explain to you what part of the consideration is. As far as the ability, yes, you can ask me, if I'm not with the mean, how do I ever answer? Let's just ask the question. How do I ever answer Constitution Baruch Hu? That's not a problem. Because the law, halacha is, suppose I'm here, and out there with the windows open, and the next house over, I'm sick, and I'm in Pesach, I can hear what's going on from the shul. So the halacha is, if the minion is doing something, it's a bona fide minion, I can be mitzaref to answer what the minion does. Okay? So therefore the women, but it still doesn't answer the fundamental problem. Okay? Okay. Because that only says that I can answer. If I daven Shmoneh Esrei over there, I'm not davening Tefillah B'Tzimun. It's a second. Tefillah B'Tzimun, they have to be davening with the tzibur, to answer the tzibur, all I need is that the place that is generating the voice. That's a valid voice. That's a valid voice. Anybody can answer. Okay? But I'm asked, but am I, if I should daven Shmoneh Esrei when the tzibur's there, I'm not, I don't get to be with the tzibur. Because I'm not with the tzibur. I'm indifferent. So the question that I have only solved half the problem. It's very clear from the poskim that women can answer. The question is, are they doing it bitzibur? Do they get that special quality of tefillah bitzibur? That's we haven't answered that question. Second of all, let me answer a different problem. They have, suppose we have a minion here, and the man on the veranda out there in the next house service says, Baruch Hu Hashem Mevokach. Can the people here answer? He says, no, because he's not. Now that's the analogy, not where there's a minion here and he's answering, but he is saying, and they want the community here. He doesn't count. He can't do that. So that's the question they're asking. That's the question that Ezra of Lau is asking about a woman saying Kaddish. The minion is on the other side of the mechitza. Okay, now, in contradistinction to that analysis, we have another fact. Accident where you could have died, or something happened to you, then you say, the poskim state, vast majority of poskim state, that this must be said in a minyan. This requires a minyan to be said. There's a minority opinion that says it can be said privately, but the vast majority hold it must be said in the presence of a minyan. Halacha does not say that it has to be done by a kriyat ha-Torah. That's simply a custom. Kriyat ha-Torah, there's everybody's around, everybody's listening. That's when the custom developed, but it doesn't need. For instance, in this shul where an aliyah is a very precious thing, you get an aliyah, you say Birkat HaGolma many more times than you get an aliyah in this community. So what normally happens is that people get aliyahs and they go up to say Birkat HaGolma. They're doing the kriyat, now they're saying the mishaberos. Between aliyah and aliyah, somebody goes up and says Birkat HaGolma without getting aliyah. So, it's not necessary, it's not required. And the halakha is very clear. If you have again, you should preferably say better go over the first 3 days, the first 5 days, the first 7 days. Okay? So as you can, there's no minion around. You didn't make it to shul. You can say you get a minion together and you say. It's not aliyah Torah is not a prerequisite, although it is the custom in many cases. Okay, so the post can clearly say the women are obligated to Birkat HaGolma, certainly after childbirth. Okay, where that's a life-threatening situation, even nowadays. And the fact of the matter is that the Poskim say in every situation a man would say it, a woman should say it. Now I know the women tend to be more careful like when they after childbirth, but if the men say it after traveling transatlantic, the woman should say it also transatlantic. Otherwise, women are makel because they're tended because that's a machloket. There's a machloket in the poskim whether air travel requires Birkat HaGolma. So the women who are hesitant to do in the first place, but by childbirth or by a dangerous operation or something serious, that's a chiyuv gomer. No, there's no machloket that the women are obligated to say. Poskim require the women are more hesitant to do it, but the poskim all say that she's chayiv. They have all sorts of eitzot how she could do it, but the one of the earliest, but the Knesset Hagdolah said she should get up on the her side of the pizza and say it. And the men will answer. She should say it to the women, the men will answer. Okay, what?
Why don't we do it with 10 women?
I would say that probably the article that I wrote on Hoon and Minyan, I maintain that they can. There's some sources from Krishnapura and other postman that say yes, 10 women can.
Esther Pito.
You know for a fact.
I was there.
Her son in front of 10 women.
No, I mean in shul. People often gather around themselves 10 women, and they bring common. But if they can do it with men, why not?
And some don't create
the
tongue.
And no. They're not going to create the tongue.
Can a woman's husband say it for her?
No. It's brought in certain poskim that she does, and Mishnah Berurah brings that custom, but most poskim are against it. that they say they just like ishto kigufo, and therefore he can say it, but most person will get to say it's your obligation to say it.
Okay, so this is a personal obligation. This contradicts what Rav Lass says. Or it's the opposite case of what Rav Lass says.
I'm creating the tension. On the one hand, we understand Rav Lass objecting, or the other, because the minyan is not there. Nevertheless, we see a lot of poskim who quote the Knesset Gedolah, including the Mishnah, all quote that the woman should get up in the Ezus Nashim and say it, and the men will answer. So you see that she can't do it with the men, with the men hearing. Right?
Is there more of an obligation to say the Knesset Gedolah to the parish?
Unquestionable.
Yes.
So what? So what? The question is not whether there's greater. The question is how does the mechanism work? Because if you say it, you can't. Okay? Now, one analysis, which is pretty tricky, one analysis is that maybe the Knesset HaGdolah holds that you don't need a minion of men, don't need a minion to say Birkat HaGdolah. The Knesset HaGdolah, who says it, might hold that a woman can say it improperly. So she says, get up there, it's not sure, and you say it. And then, but he says that at least one of the men should hear. That's what he says. Okay? But that may be true for the Knesset Gedolah, but it's not true for the other 20 poskim who quote. The other poskim who quote the Knesset Gedolah clearly hold that a minyan is required, and yet they still quote. Then he can get up and say it. And the Ovadia Yosef is clearly on that position, that you need, but he says also you can get up and say it, and there's a solution side. So we have a problem, we have a tension here of how does it work? Because the criticism seems to be valid. Okay. In defense of his grandfather, okay, in defense of his grandfather came the grandson of Yehuda Herzl Henkin. Okay. Yehuda Herzl Henkin, he learned with his grandfather for 5 years, and he lives now in Yerushalayim. His wife is Rabbanit Henkin, who runs Shishmat. Katav, okay, we're going to read through this tshuva. Katav Hagon Mori Zal Zecher Tzadik L'chaye Olam Haba B'Bahat Pardes Adlo Tavshin Chav Gimel V'Omed Latzit Shuv L'Or B'Ktavav Kerav Bet. And it comes out because Rav Henkin, the grandson, put out all his grandfather's writings. Shelegabei Amirat Kaddish Al Yedei Yitoma Im Abad Tavod Yitpaler Bezet Nashim V'Tachpotz Tomar Gam Kaddish B'Fnei Nashim B'Zman She'Omrim Kaddish bebet haKnesset shel ha'anashim, efshar shein kepeda ad kan l'shana. Vikshah alav rab echad, and some rab challenged him. He doesn't mention his name, but his name is Rav Halberstadt. Okay, v'chein hisig b'shel tshuvah, why does he call his name, I don't know. V'chein hisig b'shel tshuvah minchad Yitzchak, chelek gimel, chelek dalet, simel namen, she'ein kaddish ela b'mokom asor gvarim. מה שאין קיים בעזרת נשים ששם המחיצה, מבדלת מעזרת הגברים, ואין שם מניין. ולא דיברתי עם הגון מורי זקני, צריך. ולא דיברתי עם הגון מורי זקני. My teacher, my grandfather. זה צהל, בזה, אבל רצוני לדבר על דבריו, כיוון שהיא שאלה למעשה. I never discussed my grandfather, but this is what I believe is an explanation of the shita. Then he has a long, long discussion, and there's a cut here. Nachzor inyanenu. Yechola isha yitomar lomar kaddish be'ezrat nashim b'sha shedvarim omrim kaddish be'ezrat ha'gvarim katzaat hagon mori zkeni zatzal kishe'ein ha'mechitza magiya letikra. He says you gotta make a distinction between two types of mechitzas. If the mechitza is up to the ceiling, so that essentially it's totally two different rooms. Maybe you have a little window, but it's totally two separate rooms. So that's really two separate Hashulchot. And that's what the Aruch HaShulchan was talking about. When he said the mechitzas divide the room into two, and divide them into rooms, he's talking about the old good old fashioned mechitzas, which were two separate rooms, כדעת הגאון הסמך בשל תשעות הרשבש והמשיגים על גאון מורי זקני לאו עדתה, they didn't pay attention שכן במקומותיהם שהם יוצאי הונגריה, כל המחיצות ינחו לתקרה. You come from Hungary, all the pizzas are passed. Right? So they're right. They're right, you can't do a mechitza any other way. Ule'etzem amirat kadisha yide isha. Okay? So hold up a second. So that's his first problem. So all the questions that you want to ask is a woman in the pizza. So the answer really makes a difference. That is, if a woman is really on the other side of Hungary in the pizza, she might not be Yosef Tvilevitsi. She might as well go with the rules. Don't tell her that. Okay? But in the more modern communities, or even in those who are in Gershon, even if there's space, doesn't literally go to the top, then according to that, she definitely is Yosef. And he goes on to a great length back in this tshuva, to point out that as long as the mechitza is not up to the ceiling, as long as the two parts of the room are joined together by common function, that everybody's davening together, and it's not up to the ceiling, yes, everybody's yotzei, the men, it's not only women, it's men. In fact, the Minchat Yitzchak proves this point. It's not only modern liberal of Yehuda Herzl, but the Minchat Yitzchak, right, who was the Yitzchak vice, who was the Dayan in England and then became the head of the Eder Haredis, said that they proved this, I mentioned this when we were discussing Yom Minyan, was the case of the Yerid. They would go by train to the Yerid, and they had these tall chairs that they sat on, and they sort of divided the room into different compartments. And the Shaila was asked, if you go on the train, can you see that Tabarzel, right? And you ask them, can they daven to the mitzvah? He says, yes, as long as it doesn't go up to the ceiling, it's all right. And the students are davening together, so the space is for the same common function, they learn mitzvah together. So the same thing applies to the mechitza.
So,
these questions were asked in the 1800s. Or the 1800s they were asked, and we're going back to the affairs. Well, etzem, now he goes on to the question now, the public policy question. Well, etzem, amirat karish ayidei isha, Enoch showed about the woman saying, Kaddish, can I ask a question? Mishelet Shuvot Shuv Yaakov, Chedek Beit Simen Zayin. Who can ask you? The Cheskel Sof Chedek Yeredeya. What did they say? Shekatvu, She'en Le'isha Lomar Kaddish Bevet HaKnesset Klal. They said a woman, for public policy reasons, shouldn't say Kaddish at all in Shul. Ki lo katvu elafim in Hagam. They only wrote according to their custom. Shekak Avel Echad Omer Kaddish Bechol Par. שבוודאי אין לי שלום הקדש לבדה בבית הכנסת וענו לכל הגברים. Is that would be a problem, because only one is saying קדש. ואפילו אין שם יתומים, יש לאחד מן המתפללים לומר קדש, and even if there are no יתומים, a woman should say, some other man should say the קדש, כמו שהביא הרמב"ם ברחיים. ואין זה דומה, now we're going to the second group of Ramayim, ואין זה דומה למה שכתבו האחרונים, שישה תברך הגומר בעזרת הנשים ויענו לה הגברים. Okay, now watch what he says. He says, now he makes a distinction between Kaddish and Birkat HaGomer. Because the Birkat HaGomer, the woman does say it. How come the Poskim didn't object? The Poskim objected to saying Kaddish, but not the Birkat HaGomer. Now I would have said the distinction is clear. What's the distinction? Kaddish is linked with Tfilah B'Tzibur. That's the whole source of the confusion. Birkat HaGomer is a clear personal obligation. There's no room for any confusion here. Why would I think that? Because she gets up and says Kaddish. She gets up and says Birkat HaGomer, that she's acting as Shnei Tzibur. She's clearly, everybody knows Birkat HaGomer is a personal obligation. Kaddish, the problem is that, you know, it's Kaddish always, every place else appears as part of the communal obligation. That's why the problem is confusion. But he doesn't say that. Let's see what he says. Right? She says, ואין זה דומה למה שכתבו האחרונים, שאישה תברך הגומר בעזרת הנשים ויענו לה הגברים, כי שם מברכת באקרא. Because Birkat HaGomer is not a regular thing. It happens, you know, once in a blue moon, it happens that a woman gets up and says Birkat HaGomer. The truth of the matter is, I don't remember a woman saying Birkat HaGomer in shul here for the last 3-4 months. I don't remember.
We did it for
No. He has no objection to a woman getting up in a prison saying right about that.
No, he did it in Shul.
What? Okay, I'm not saying, but it really is bakrai. Mashe'en ken kagesh, shehu yud alef chodesh. Okay? It goes on, if she starts saying kagesh, she'll be saying it for 11 months straight. V'od, she'isha, now comes the other argument, which was mentioned before. V'yad she'isha chayeved v'verkadagomeh. U'tzricha levaret v'makom asara. And he tibula bevet ha-knesset, kibin she'kasha le'lesov minyan. Second, the woman is obligated v'verkadagomeh. Right? And therefore, she says it in shul. Avot ikar ha-kadish lo nitkanel le'banim, but ikar kadish is for the sons. The daughters, there was no traditional custom for them to say it. So therefore, it would present problems. Okay. Now, skip down to the next paragraph. V'ulam b'shel ha-tshuvot sh'vot Yaakov sham hitil la lo makadish b'minyan b'vayit, va'af shen ein ha-minah kein, even though that's not the normative custom, nirish ha-kol lefi hazman v'makom. Everything depends on the time and the place. ועין בסבב בתים, לאחד מן הראשונים בשער הקריאת התורה, שער שני עוד וב, שכתב בשם יש מן הגדולים, לספר הבתים writes the name of one of the גדולים, שכשמפלים בבתיהם בעשרה, אישה קורא שם בתורה, שלא נקרא ציבור, אלא כשמפלים בבית הכנסת. You see that even though the rabbis said that in shul, a woman should get an aliyah, the sefer batim is a minority opinion, but he already makes a distinction between a house and a shul, that the woman can't get an aliyah, that's only in shul, because of kavanat tzibur. Eventually we'll get to discuss that. But in a house you can't. So you see already there's a distinction between house and shul, and the two are considered two different regimes. Avot tov yoter shetomer kadosh bezrat nashim, katsa'a gigon moriza zekeni, she'az hi batzneya, it's more modest, ve'en adom lamine bevayit shesh bo asifa u'pirsum. And it's better, he says, for her to say it on the other side of the pizza in shul than to say it in her house, where she's the center of attention. Kamo shekutav b'shel ha-tshuvot chabad yir. Ma she'en ken be'ezrat nashim, which is not true in ezrat nashim. V'gam shel ha-tshuvot chabad yir, knesset gadol, yodu l'zeh l'fi menagim sh'arbei omdin kadosh b'yachad. And they would, even the Chabad Yair object to proper policy, they would certainly agree. She's on the other side of the mechitza. She's saying together with other men who are saying, why should you worry? Maybe there is no problem.
The grandson seems a lot
more
scared.
Yeah.
Maybe he was
not
scared of the grandfather.
He said Efsher. Look at the source number 6 in the middle where it's underlined. The grandfather said Efsher Shenke Pei. You see the underlining, the last words of the underlining? Source number 6? Efsher Shenke Pei. He said it, the grandfather said. Okay, because he was really, in many ways, he's coming along and institutionalizing women saying Kaddish. You have to understand, it wasn't a case, you know, there's an. He's coming in and saying it's perfectly all right across the board. That's pretty radical. Okay, so that is essentially the view of Rav Hendrick. Okay, now, along the same lines as the view of Rav Hendrick, Rav Shaul Yisraeli, look at source number 10. Rav Shaul Yisraeli was the Rosh Yeshiva, one of the Rosh Yeshiva, together with Rav Ram Shapiro of Merkaz. He also set up a kollel, in which he was also one of the Abbei Batim Yerushalayim, or the Batim Gevel of Yerushalayim. He set up a kollel. I forgot what it was called.
Eretz,
thank you very much. Called Eretz Chanda, in which you could fax him shilohs from anywhere in the world, and within 48 hours, he promised you he was faxed back. And this was very important. I mean, there's a case, I have a cousin who is in Kenya, who is head of the Jewish community in Kenya, and his name is Dr. Dick Silverstein. and he's the personal doctor to the king, to the president. He calls himself president. I'll tell you what he is. He's the president. And he's had the Jewish community, and they had a Chok Shaila. There was a problem, there was water shortages, and you could only water the lawns at certain times. And the Jewish community, there's not an abundance of rabbis in Kenya. So he wrote a letter, but he needed a psak. He wanted to know whether he could put the water sprinkler system on a Shabbos clock. So my brother Doe, writes my brother Doe and says, well, what do you think? And he says, so of course it's mucha. So my brother, so David says, that's very nice. Doe Firmer says it's mucha, but nobody else will listen to. I'll listen to Doe Firmer, but nobody else will listen to Doe Firmer. He says, what can I do? So he said, send a fax to Rosh Hashanah Israeli. And they sent it to Rosh Hashanah Israeli. He said, I'll bet then Yerushalayim. He sends a fax back in 48 hours. They had the answer. They could put the sprinkler system on the Shabbos clock. With a sign, they had a sign that the sprinkler system should be an Imara sign, a big sign, and there's no time. Any case, so.
This is only in Kenya?
I think it's not anywhere, but I don't know. But the Shaila was Kenya insisted in having a tshuva from some major urban source. It's okay. Now look at source number 10. So this is now it's called the Mareha Basak, speed of light, and I'll show you Israeli. The question is as follows: Isha Avutza Lomar Kaddish B'Sheket Bezot Nashim Shal Beit HaKnesset Al Bala Sheneftar She'en Banim Lomar Alav Kaddish HaRashayit. Can she say Kaddish? So he says. יש לו כמה טעמים לחיוב האבל בקדיש, הידי אמרתו מתקדש שמו הגדול בעולמות, והידי כך מתכפרים אבנות הנפטר, ומציל אותו מן הפורענות, ואף מעלה את הנפטר מדרגה לדרגה בגן עדן. Even if you're in Gan Eden, it says it raises you in higher rank, because that's more and more so. So it's good for the spiritual development of the deceased. But יש בקדיש צידוק הדין, it's acceptance of judgment, You sanctify God's name, and you as the mourner accepting the divine decree. Shemakabel din malchut shemayim, shekol mishpatavim netzedek. Now he goes on. L'chaola tamim elu sheichim abisha. Whatever the reason is, my men, these reasons apply to women as well. L'chein haya makom lahatir l'isha lomar kaddish. It should seem that there's no reason why women shouldn't say kaddish. Ach, haskamat achonim she'en lahatir l'isha lomar kaddish bebet ha'knesset. Yesh titiru l'isha lomar kaddish bebetah. אך רבו הפוסקים שחלקו על זה דעת זו ואסרו משום החלשות המנהגים. And they were worried about the weakening of the customs and the problem of public policy. Okay, that, until now, you know, everything is new. Everything is the old story. Now he goes, don't die. In this case, however, אם האישה תאמר קדיש בקום רגיל, she doesn't have to say בלחש. The question said, who had to say בלחש? He says, no, you say the kol ragil, you're not screaming it out, you bring attention to yourself, but you're saying it. Kol ragil of Rabbios, bezot nashim, yesh makom lahatir, ve'en bezeh mishum hachrashat ha-menegid. You don't have to worry about the public policy considerations. Im zot, kedai letzayen sheyesh nafshavut yoter pshuta, v'hi sheisha teskor adam shomar kadish, she gets somebody else to say kadish. That may be a practical solution, not a personally satisfying. But let me continue, wait a second, look down at the note. Okay. Note 7. כך נראה שבעזרת נשים אין בזה משום החלשות המנהגים אף לחדות יעיל. Now essentially what he's saying is Rav Henke. The way Rav Henke, the way the grandson understood it. Then once it's done in the Ezra Nashim, no problem. Notice he didn't say that you have to say it when there are men saying it. He didn't require that. According to Rav Shaul Yisraeli, once, maybe I'm reading more into the text than it says, if he wanted to make that a requirement, he could have said it. He does not make it. According to Shaul Yisraeli, once a woman is not saying it on the other side of the desert, Nashim, it seems to be okay. Yes?
His willingness to say, you know, but you just meant a man to do it. Is that because it's not a child anyway saying it? In this case, it's a wife. Because he said a child is in a special position. Do something here, so.
Thank you for bringing that to my attention. I didn't even notice that point. That is an interesting twist that I didn't consider. It's a good point.
You might say that if it was a daughter, for sure he would permit it and even encourage it. daughter maybe in the
Let me say, Shekhayach, you, I really didn't see that point in the tshuva, and the point is well taken. I would, you were able to understand?
No,
okay. I would say that the point is that she's not obligated. I don't think it has so much to do with the fact that let me tell you, it keeps in mind, there, I mentioned there was going to be a shiur yesterday, and I mentioned that the Chaim Ibris wanted to know what the nature of marriage was. Is marriage a contractual relationship? And it's, you make one time, and it goes on, you know, it goes on for the lifetime of the couple. Or is it something that's constantly renewing itself? And there's all sorts of nafkamina, the distinctions, I'm not sure if something changes in the relationship of male and female or something, that they can't consummate the relationship anymore. There are some halakhic distinctions. Anyway, so the first side is the contract relation goes on, starts once, and the other one's constantly renewing itself. So the Ragachaver, who was the Rav Rosen, said to Chaim, it was like the second side. And it's constantly doing it, so he says, Abazoi, that's some mafuta. That's one of that's a common culture shit.
What if there are other mourners? It's not only women, say there are sons and daughters, and the daughters don't stay just as long as the son.
Once, the issue is not one person saying, but everybody saying it, and it makes a difference. There's a greater imperative to be matir if there's the daughter is the only mourner, right? But once we got into a situation where Rav Henkin has now maneuvered us, and she's staying with everybody else. You don't hear her. She's staying with everybody else, or she has a machitza papa. She didn't say it because she's saying all the other mourners get up and say it, right? Notice he does not say. He does not say there have to be other mourners there, right? So I don't, that in fact we'll see is Rabbi Ibris Soloveitchik's opinion. Nice. Okay. Let's just read one more tshuva. Okay, let's read number 11. One more tshuva, number 11, which is a very strong tshuva written by Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. Okay, Od Yisrael Yosef Ben Chai by Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, and he writes as follows. He quotes Va'ayim b'tshuva chavod yaya b'tshuva resh mabet shekatav she'im ein lamed ben rak bat v'abat nesua as a bal tzarich lomar kaddish. The husband should say kaddish. V'im abat eina nesua as mitzad ikar hadin. By the way, I don't see this anywhere in the tshuva, but let's continue. V'im abat, it's irrelevant. V'im abat eina nesua אז מצד עיקר הדין, הבית יכולה לומר קדיש, אלא שלא תסכן שעל ידי זה יתחלשו מנהגי ישראל, וכיוון דעיקה פרסום יש לנו חבר. But why, I must say, you look at the Chavad Yoyah, you have the whole tshuva in front of you, he doesn't talk about it. Talks about the case in Amsterdam, in the case in Amsterdam, it was a kid. Right? It was a daughter, it was anybody being married, or something like that. So I don't know what he's referring to, but the halacha is the halacha. It's not relevant to the point. Okay, v'nire, watch what he says. V'nire achshav shekama anashim v'nashim Yisrael lo chamin ba'ad shivui shavi nashi anashim l'umat anashim. The people are fighting for women's equality. B'yachas im aliyot b'shvel anashim, and it's expressing itself with the woman getting aliyot. Im kein im harabanim hachredim. ימנעו אישה ולומר קדיש במקום שיש אפשרות שעל ידי זה תתרבה השפעה של הרבנים השמרנים והרפורמים. But if we don't allow them to do Kaddish, which Allah is not permitted to, and as a result, the influence of the conservative reform will thereby increase, אז אסור למנוע בת מלומר קדיש. What has he done? He's taking public policy. He's counting public policy. Says, you're going to do what you're first, says, I got other public policy. Rav Henkin used another argument. He wrote, people are alienated. By letting the women say Kaddish, they'll come back to Yiddishkeit, and therefore we should. He says, on the contrary, it's more than just alienation or alienation. They're going to be thrown into the other camp. Okay? And let me tell you a Maisa Shavaya. Professor Susan Heschel I was rabbi at the Harvard Hill in 1969 to 1974. Comes into shul, a young woman by the name of Susan Heschel. And I ask her, are you the daughter of? And she says, yes, I am the daughter of. And she's telling me how she had just gone through a very traumatic year, a very traumatic period, because it wasn't that year, or it was shortly before that her father had died. Her father was a tremendous Talmud Chacham philosopher, affiliated with the conservative camp, but he was orthopraxy. He was a firm Jew. That's neither here nor there. And she wanted to say Kaddish. And she said she found it an impossible situation. They would throw out a shoe. They would make fun of her. She said she had a very hard time. And that turned her off. And Susan Heschel right now is now a very, how I say, she's very, I would say she's an anti-Orthodox establishment. And I know it came from that experience. Okay? Very brilliant woman, a woman who was from, who broke with Orthodoxy because of this. And there are many other cases of women who testify the traumatic experience they had, they could not internalize it, they could not sublimate it. They had a very rough time with Kaddish. It caused some tremendous, tremendous crises. And the poskim, I think that Rav Henkin and Rav Soloveitchik are right on. Nowadays, you can't say things. Everybody admits this is a public policy issue. Nobody denies it. So the question is, are there public policy considerations which countervene the ones that were stated in the 1600s, which may very well be valid? But the system is different, right? And if you find more and more poskim in the modern period coming around, it's because they feel the public policy considerations have changed. And these are my simshayu. I mean, I know case after case of women. I would say most traditional women can sublimate it. And say there are other ways I can sit my toe right and get stuck. I can get somebody else to say Kaddish. There are women who can't. Now, if the halacha has these outs, maybe the Orthodox community should be a little bit more sensitive. Essentially, since there are great poskim, we've already seen three of them, right? We've seen Rav Henkin, the grandfather. Rav Henkin is a son, grandson, supporting Rav Shol Yisraeli, which is the second major poskim, and Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. We're going to see that his brother, Bishop Ersolovich, says the very same. Okay? God willing, we'll see you next time.